the opening page, you know, where you say in your depressed state that the thought maybe had floated around your mind, but this wasn't a case of you sort of thinking, "Oh, I'm going to end it now. I'm going to commit suicide." But you felt that you had just reached a point where you'd had enough, and you describe it as almost preparing yourself for a good night's sleep.
Well, I couldn't imagine the life going on anymore. I wasn't Willie Thorne, the snooker player anymore, so I was depressed about that. I owed the wrong kind of people that were kind of obviously knocking on my door and kind of threatening me and things, which obviously was causing me problems mentally. You know, I just thought, where do I go from here?
You estimated that you had gambled and lost, Willie, what, 1.5 million?
Oh, at least that. I mean, turned over a lot more, because obviously sometimes you win, and it's not all the case of losing, is it? I mean, you have your spells where you win, and many, many times during my gambling, you know, sprees, I'd have 100,000 quid wrapped around me and things like that. So, I mean, I had plenty of good times, but...
How much were you gambling on? Say an individual bet, Willie. What sort of money are we talking about?
Well, the biggest problem with this country, well, Great Britain, I say there, is credit. I mean, the thing is, when you're on a telephone, you know, you ring up, I'm going to have 2,000 quid on a horse. By the time I get through, I'm having 5,000 on. By the time I'm talking to the, you know, the race manager, I'm having 10,000 on. So I've rang up to have 1,000, I've ended up having 10,000 on. Because unfortunately, credit means nothing until you have to pay. It's like when you go in a casino, you've got, that's why they don't let you bet in cash. Because when you're pulling cash out of your pocket, it hurts. But when you're betting in chips, that's why there's chips. Mm. Because there's no value to chips. And that's the problem with this country. We've got credit cards, you know, credit. I mean, there's all online gaming now and things like that. And it's just honestly, there's so many people out there in the same trouble as I was. And a lot of footballers, as I talk about in the book, if I can just save one of them from knowing what it can do to your life. I mean, I had a great life. My life was very, very good. Okay, I wasn't the best snooker player in the world. I didn't win as many tournaments as I should have done, a lot of it down to my state of mind, obviously, what I was going through. But if I can just stop one person from going down this slippery road, it just runs out of control. And what they've got to realise is that your income doesn't stay the same. That was my problem. Where I was earning 3,000 or 4,000, 10,000 a week sometimes, you know, all of a sudden, when you're not the snooker player, when you're not the professional footballer, when you're not the professional golfer at the top of your tree, all of a sudden that income kind of halves, fifths, tenths, and now you're still betting in the same way as you were when you were earning the money.
So you think
that's the biggest problem.
Almost in a way, the money that you were earning was nearly hiding the addiction in a way, because
exactly,
it wasn't, and you weren't seeing the cost of it.
Exactly, because I thought, well, it doesn't matter. Next week I'm earning a few quid. I'm playing in the tournament. If I get to the course, I'm getting 10 grand. I've got a couple of exhibitions where I'm getting a grand, you know, all of a sudden. But all of a sudden, that suddenly stops. And that's the same with footballers. I know that there's about 10 that have come out at the minute saying that they've admitted, obviously, Merson's the biggest one as far as it. But there's lots of Premiership footballers I know gambling massive. And there's one, which obviously I can't name, which will come out in the wash in the next, that's actually had to remortgage his house. It is on excess of 50,000 a week, and he's remortgaged his house.
And this gambling addiction, the financial mess that you're in, you've tried to take your own life. And one of the biggest things that you then faced, reading the book, was trying to explain to your children why you'd tried to end it. And there's this part in the book where you recall your son, Kieran, asking you, "Daddy, why did you want to leave us?"
Yeah, it's almost making me cry now thinking about that, because, you know, we'd split up with Fiona and my children had spent, obviously, a lot of their early youth without their father. Okay, I'll see them at weekends and all the rest of it, but, you know, you just almost forget, you know, that they have feelings and things like that. And okay, they were excited to see me every weekend and when I could, and obviously with my job I could see them sometimes in the week and things. And, you know, that's, you know, a month or so after, that fateful day, we're out in the car and... Well, I just had to pull in and we just absolutely sobbed all together. And he was probably, I don't know, 17, 18 at the time. So, you know, he knew what he was. Not quite that old, 14, 15. And it was just... Kieran of the twins has always been, like, you know, much more close to me than Tristan. Tristan's always been one that would get out and go and get it done and things, which Kieran was always like, you know, a daddy's boy, as it were. And
did those words hit you harder than anything else?
Oh, absolutely. I can't tell you. And just when you just mentioned it just then, it's brought tears to my eyes as I'm talking about it. Mm. You know, and, you know, I just think...
For one of your own kids to say, you know, why did you want to leave us? I mean, because it's probably something,
exactly,
as you say...
Unbelievable.
When you're not, yeah.
Unbelievable. Mm.